Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by three very awesome people at CIS, Mr. Rob Reese. Rob, how are you, sir?
I am good, sir. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Mr. Dustin Cox. Dustin, how are you, sir?
Doing good, Sean. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. And last but not least, Mr. Cliff Moten. Cliff, how are you?
Hey, Sean, I'm doing absolutely fantastic. Hope you're doing the same.
Wonderful. I certainly am with you guys. This is going to be a fun podcast. So one of the things we're going to talk about is zero-day threats. I really want to focus on where we're seeing the elements or the issues that are posed to endpoints and really what we can do about that. And obviously, zero days have many different, I would say, definitions. You could probably ask three people would have different definitions. But Rob, I want to start with you and get your definition of a zero-day threat.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I mean, a zero-day threat is essentially, it's something that's unknown in the environment in the wild, right? It's a threat, it's an unidentified threat. It has not been previously seen. People aren't aware of it. Oftentimes it can persist for a little while before people actually start to realize, hey, I've got a problem. And so there's a lot more to it, but I'll stop there.
No, that's perfect. And Dustin, you know, this is a little different than threats that we've normally see in an environment. In some cases, we're aware of what they are and we can build heuristic signatures and identify them. So what is the big difference in this space?
As far as incident response goes, when we're talking about a zero day?
That's exactly right.
The biggest key difference, in my opinion, would be we have no real intel to go off of when we're dealing with an incident that includes a zero day vulnerability.
Exactly. Now, this moves us into different spaces. Right. So we're thinking about something we've never seen before, something that's causing an underlying issue. And so, Cliff, this leads us down a path. And I really want to get your thoughts on the dangers that exist for laptops, mobile devices, servers, etc. How dangerous is this type of activity and what can we start to think about in this space when we're preparing necessarily for zero-day threats?
Yeah, Sean, I mean, zero days, quite frankly, at least in my mind, and I'm sure a lot would agree, probably one of the most dangerous types of threats to any organization, even individuals, right? Because just as Rob was saying, this is something that's unknown, right? So it is a vulnerability. However, it's not something that the wider public knows about. Sometimes these things kind of creep around in the background for a while without anybody knowing, certain people knowing, the ones that you don't want to know. And that's really where the big danger is posed at, right? Someone could be in a system kind of picking and prodding around, and because they're using these types of zero days, these unknown vulnerabilities, they could go undetected for quite some time and even be able to extract data and whatnot, which makes it really, really hard, as Dustin was saying, to protect against them, right?
Exactly right. It's one of those elements where we're looking for something either benign in terms of behavior. As you mentioned, it could go undetected for a long time. One of the things I think that we need to think about as a community is information sharing when we're starting to see these types of issues, these elements. But Rob, I just want to give you a quick introduction. So Rob is our cert manager. Me and Rob work all the time in terms of process, incident response, digital forensics. So, Rob, have you seen some real-world examples of zero-day exploits, specifically targeting endpoints? And what was the impact that you had seen and some of the things we need to do as a community to kind of raise that awareness?
First of all, I appreciate the question, Sean, because zero days, oftentimes by the time they're figured out, there is a wide swath of victims that has been already impacted, right? And so you can think back to some of the previous ones that we've seen in the past, Hafnium being one, Solar Winds being another, right? And from a threat actor perspective, right, if I'm going to target an entity, well, I can target XYZ locality or XYZ business, or I can target the vendor which provides services to those different sectors, and thereby I'm able to get information on a lot of different people, a lot of different organizations at one time. And that's what really makes one of the things that makes Zero Days so impactful is when they are executed successfully, they end up making it where a vendor or a particular piece of software or equipment is essentially targeted, and everybody who has that particular device or software in their network then creates a vulnerability that can be exploited. The other aspect of it that we have found in CERT that's made so difficult is, and you heard Dustin allude to this, but you literally are building the ship while you're selling it. So as people figure out that, hey, we've got this vulnerability, we've got this exploit, you've got a vendor that's trying to put out the patches. Meanwhile, on the incident response side, we're coming up with a playbook. We're now trying to write a playbook for something that we've never encountered before, but are absolutely in the middle of. And so that is a little bit of a different dynamic that creates some challenges.
Absolutely. And Rob, we've talked about preparation and having standardized approaches to incident response and forensics in the space when we become aware that there's a certain issue. How is important to have that preparation and to also practice?
It is so important, but it's not just important to have the preparation. You hit on the second part of it, practicing it. Do I know what's normal in my environment? Dustin, for example, is a super smart analyst. He's capable of helping tons of different people with cyber attacks. The one thing that no one on my team can do, though, is tell you what's normal for you. And so that becomes a significant challenge point. The more that you know about your own environment, the more that you're able to identify anomalies early on, and then to start to, you know, make some decisions about taking action on them, the better off you are.
100%. Dustin, we'll jump over to you. And as Rob mentioned, you know, an elite CERT analyst by all means. What are some of the examples you've seen in terms of zero-day exploitation and the impact that you've seen in your experience?
I think some of the biggest impacts I see from zero days are often after they're no longer zero days. And it's the fact that others start to take advantage of those vulnerabilities when not patched, when a patch is available. So we see a lack of patch management, really, that could have snuffed out a lot of these situations that we end up dealing with. Easy example, 2023, back when I worked for elections before coming to CIS, there was a lot of talk about the Move It Zero Day going on. Which had a patch, but then pushed forward, it started getting used by North Korea, and everybody was realizing they never patched for this vulnerability. So situations like that become really important to take a step back. And just because a zero day was handled is no longer a zero day, doesn't mean that your organization is perfectly safe. You need to go apply those patches.
Oh, exactly right. I love that. I want to just touch on that a little bit more, Dustin, because that takes us down a path of both due diligence and just because a zero day is now a 1 day, a 2 week, a three, you know, a 5 month, we've had that time to react. Still doesn't mean we've protected ourselves without doing that representative due diligence. How often do you see that in your cases where it's, if you just have patched, we wouldn't be having this conversation. This wouldn't be the worst day of your life, you know, in terms of professional career for certain individuals who are contacting you. How often does that occur?
I don't have the exact statistics, but my gut reaction is very commonly it happens.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, as we go down and we, with the podcast, what we are is cybersecurity where you are, right? It is trying to find people who are in many different layers of maturation in terms of their cybersecurity program, risk management, incident response, forensic capability. What we try and do is bring lessons, right? And I think the lesson here, and Dustin, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is that as we understand our underlying environment, and I think you've got to understand, right? Let's go to the CIS controls 1 and 2. What's my hardware? What's my software inventory? Ultimately being responsible for the update, that there's an awareness that there's an underlying issue, vulnerability. And Rob really touched on it with supply chain. Right. I mean, this could be coming from the vendor. You could be individually attacked in these spaces. When we try and provide the recommendations, the remediations from your analysis cases, what is the number one element that you bring to their attention in terms of this is what you want to do, so potentially this doesn't happen again?
A nice umbrella recommendation is always patch management. However, I mean, we give advice, but we don't tell you exactly how to do it because we don't understand the intricacies of everybody's organization, right? But there's also a big recommendation that, broadly speaking, just centers around the idea of knowledge of your environment, you know, like getting those logs, having applications in place to be able to scope what is happening from a network perspective, from an endpoint perspective, having the tools required to actually find behavioral changes within your network, because you know normal behavior better than anyone. A big part of our initial call during an incident is trying to understand behavior. What is normal? What tools do you use? What tools would be strange to see? Is it normal for, you know, all of these things to be just open to the internet, or is that abnormal? So just having a full understanding and visibility into your own environment and keeping up to date with patch management are two very obvious recommendations that we usually push forward.
Fantastic. And the reason I dwell on it a little bit, probably too long, but just for thoughts for the group, is as we start to think about this, it seems like, and the team here, we've been in the industry many, many years. It's kind of the same thing, right? We're making the same recommendations. And ultimately, we want to push that due diligence. One, ultimately shift left from the vendor perspective that 0 days are harder to find and, you know, necessarily execute against underlying victims and environments. But it seems like we're having to go through the same recommendations continuously. And it's really part now of the due diligence that a respective group, respective personnel responsible for technology need to have their due diligence and bring something to the table, right? Their due diligence in this space is working with you, Rob, the team, in terms of managing those incidents appropriately by providing the information. What was the trigger? What is not normal before it becomes, you know, a blue screen of death or a ransomware element, things of that nature. I think we need to, you know, encourage that necessarily, that there's a need to bring information to the table so you understand. I think, Dustin, you put it wonderfully in that space. So excellent work there. And then, Cliff, I want to talk about certain thoughts in this space. And again, Cliff, a cybersecurity solutions engineer, manager of that team, when we're thinking about managed detection and response, why is that so important in really the life cycle of an organization and bringing really elements of telemetry, that understanding, I think are fulfilled by some of the tooling in this space. Am I thinking about that right, Cliff?
Yeah, 100%. And it's interesting, Sean, as you say that, I was listening to what Dustin was saying and some of what Rob was saying in terms of behaviors and things of that nature. And managed detection response can certainly bring you some of that. You know, the behavioral analysis behind some of those tools, 100% can kind of find those baselines for your environment, for your endpoints, and then start to look for those deviations in a more automated fashion. And of course, if you've got a legitimate MDR service, and you've got people behind that are looking at it, now you've got another element to it, right? Where you've got people that can start to learn your environment, even though they're not in it all the time. And of course, a really good MDR tool is going to pull all these other items together, such as, you know, inventory, software inventory, and things of that nature, because you know, we know that the zero-day threats, they're unknown, but you also probably have a lot of things in your environment that may be unknown, right? You know, I tell people all the time, you think about your data center. You've probably got a water sensor, humidity sensor sitting on the floor to make certain that there's no water in there, that there's not a flood. That thing's got a MAC address, it's got an IP address, and it likely has been forgotten and never inventoried, right? And that's where a lot of these MDR tools come in. They look for these things to be around to help you get that holistic inventory, you know, kind of falling in with those CIS critical controls and whatnot. And of course, having personnel that can actually look at those things, monitor them 24/7. Nobody has enough time in a day. None of us can run 24/7. And that's why having those MDR services are so very, very important. It's a conversation that myself and my team has with, you know, MSISAC members all the time, of course. Is kind of how can you do this with such little resources, right?
Exactly. I'm going to pull on that thread, but quickly, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government?
If so, you know just how difficult cyber defense can get.
You're the frontline defense against cyber threats, yet you don't have the shiny tools, big budget, or skilled talent of an enterprise.
Well, guess what? You don't need them.
You do need a community of like-minded folks to unlock the power of collective cybersecurity.
And that's the superpower of the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
The Multi-State ISAC provides cyber underserved organizations with protections they otherwise couldn't afford at a price that works for them.
But it's more than just access to services. It's access to a community of peers where your participation protects them and theirs protects you.
Not to mention access to the 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center as your full-time public sector cybersecurity partner.
Available as a single organization or state or territory-wide option, the MSISAC membership provides threat intelligence, monitoring, and more to fortify your cyber defense.
Become a member today by visiting cisecurity.org/ms-isac.
So Cliff, as we think about that, I just want to pull on that thread a little bit, because one of the things I believe is very, very important, especially with the current MDR tooling, is that when we mention bringing that due diligence to the table, I think MDR provides a lot of the answers we're looking for. In a lot of cases, if we can provide reporting, certain telemetry, certain behavioral characteristics, and we can say, you know, here's where there was a deviation necessarily in CPU utilization or storage or, you know, something along those lines that MDR necessarily plays. I think that, Cliff, is such potent information that we can provide to incident responders, such as Rob's team and Dustin himself. That type of telemetry is so important in this space. So would you agree, Cliff?
Oh, 100%. I mean, not just from the perspective of actually trying to detect some of these items, right? And Sean, you hit the nail on the head. You said about CPU and memory usage. These are things that maybe get overlooked sometimes. People think of these things in terms of performance and maybe not so much in terms of detection, right? A machine that is you know, off hours, spiking CPU and memory, could certainly be a kind of a something that shows you that either you've got software on there that's doing something, or you've actually got an attacker that's in that system and doing something, you know, network activity spiking could be an attacker exfiltrating data, things of that nature. So 100%, those things are all kind of tells, so to speak, right, in terms of if you're being attacked. And then, of course, there's the after fact of that, you know, which I'm sure Dustin knows all about this, is, you know, you go in and something's happened, right? You've caught it, you've stopped it. You got to figure out, of course, how did that happen so that you can stop it in the future, right? That's the greatest part about incident response, right, is figuring out how you can make sure that doesn't happen again. And that's exactly what you're going to do, is you're going to use something such as an MDR, right? And you're going to be able to pull all those logs. You're going to be able to see that CPU correlation along with certain types of network activity, with certain types of memory activity, maybe a malware that was exploded and where it actually came from, how it functioned, maybe how lateral movement happened from one place to another. So it all comes together, right? And that MDR tool, quite frankly, is going to be a great source of truth, right?
Completely agree. Completely agree. Because I think, you know, Rob, as we go down this path, is once we start to either believe that there's a zero day in an environment or something's unusual, or, well, the zero day is now 1, 2, 3 day, it's detected in our environment. What are some of those immediate steps an organization should take, one for containing and two for mitigation?
Sure. One of the biggest things I think we've talked about already is being able to identify, right, the number of devices that you have that are impacted. I heard you guys talking all about asset inventory and knowing what is on your network. A lot of folks that we interact with, they have a real tough challenge because they've inherited networks from someone else, right? And so they oftentimes may not know everything that's on their network, not because they don't want to know or because they aren't trying to know. It's because, you know, over the years, right, things have been added to the network. Sometimes, an IT director is made aware of it. Sometimes they may not be, depending on how the setup is. And so it's not uncommon to see an attack happen on an appliance that someone did not know that was still turned on or that still had some type of access. And so initially in containment, it's really identifying, right, what is my scope? What is my scope of impact? And how do I go about determining how widespread that impact actually is? And I'll actually kick that over to Dustin as well, because he may have some additional things to kind of add to it.
Yeah. I think in addition to having these tools, it's really important to have someone actually looking at what comes out of these tools. We've definitely had situations before where we finally end up pulling up what they have available. And sure enough, all the alerts are sitting there. And they have been sitting there for maybe a month or so, but no one was looking. No one was paid to do that job. So it's very important to know that. It's also where situations like CIS's SOC team really comes into play and comes up to bat for us every single day. They're able to look at those, and if they can't tell, they will send it to you and they will help funnel down the type of traffic you should really look at and say yes or no, or I'm not sure. And then we can look into it more with you. Another thing to consider, which is why more advanced tooling is becoming so much more important and less of an option, is the topic of a zero day means that there is no indicator. And a very basic legacy type antivirus tool only functions off of known indicators. We're talking about hash values, really. And so if it does not have that definition, because there is no definition, it won't mark anything. That is, if we're dealing with some sort of zero day that actually has a payload with an actual physical file associated with it. But even some of those behavior patterns might not be logged yet as indicators. So having things that can look as wide as possible and having human eyes on that data is very important.
Yes.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Please, Rob, Any other thoughts?
No, I'm just sitting here thinking in my head, ditto to everything that he is saying.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a great point about, the hands on keyboard, so to speak, the human behind it, because when those things are detected, Dustin made a great point that sometimes that tooling is there and the information's there and the compromise has been known, potentially known for a while, but nothing was done about it, right? So that's where the importance comes in of having someone that is actually watching that and that can take some level of action. He had mentioned the CIS SOC. That's the beauty of it, is that they can see these things happen and then they can actually isolate endpoints so that you can keep from lateral movement, you can keep from things spreading. So say that something was detected through behavioral analysis, it could potentially have been a zero day, they're going to be able to stop it, right, in its tracks, so to speak. And then, we've got a lot of great people here that also work on creating signatures for these things after the fact and looking back on data, whether it's the MDR data or if it's the intrusion detection data from Albert, and be able to determine if your organization has been affected by something, which is even more amazing, quite frankly, to have something that comes out that's totally unknown and within hours, days, be able to create some kind of an indicator to look back on data and then reach out to the customer and say, hey, this is what's going on. Who do we need to have involved? Someone like Dustin or someone like Rob gets involved in to help them out.
Exactly. And that's one of the threads I'd mentioned before is about that community element as well. Because with the MDR tools, they themselves have a community behind them, threat intelligence. They're looking at many different behavioral heuristics across many different platforms. Being able to collate that update in real time, necessarily a detection capability. But like you say, if you're not looking and you've got endpoints that are compromised, that's obviously it's null, right? It's a nullified element, and we're still into the fact that we need incident response and post-breach reaction. And so I think very, very important, you mentioned, obviously the CIS SOC, wonderful team, 24/7, literally there all the time, watching, monitoring, quarantining, and assessing. That brings another element, as it were, to the table. And it leads me down to, this question, Rob and Dustin, is with these MDR tools, how do they assist in that forensic analysis, that post-incident response capability? Is it simply utilizing that telemetry that'll be available in order to do assessments of an underlying endpoint, determine root cause, things of that nature? Or does it go further and beyond that? Rob, I'll throw that over to you.
Yeah, I think, so I like to equate things in the virtual world to things in the physical world. And so my background is law enforcement. And so, if I'm going to investigate a case, I need evidence, right? I need to be able to create timelines. I need to be able to understand behavior over periods of time. I think one of the biggest benefits of an MDR tool is providing that centralization of evidence, right, in a centralized location where I can go pull that evidence. I like making data work for me. I would rather not have to work for the data. And so I think MDR does a great job of enabling you to have the data work for you. And I'll point over to Dustin for his thought on it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it helps in multiple ways. So my position is made up of a few responsibilities. There's the incident response, there's the root cause analysis, and then there's recommendations going on. And I think MDR plays a big role in all three of those parts. The telemetry data, Sean, as you mentioned, plays a huge role, especially in root cause analysis and like deep dive forensics, right? I'm basically taking all the logs I can from a service like that and seeing what I can come up with. I'm building my timeline, essentially, which can hopefully help me get a root cause. We don't always get it, but we hope we can. And then there's also the incident response. You all mentioned the ability to isolate an endpoint. That's huge. A lot of times during our initial call, we find out that nothing has actually been done yet as far as responding to the compromise. So if we know that they have a tool such as that, we can start to make live recommendations on the phone before I've touched any data to help them keep their environment as secure as possible while the investigation continues.
Yeah, and Dustin makes a very good point too about the logging and central logging, right? One of the big points to be known about that is kind of that source of truth, right? So we talked earlier about those classic antivirus agents, right, that are using signatures. Those classic agents also are classically just on that endpoint, which means an attacker that's in there and they're kind of mucking about and doing whatever can also delete the evidence of whatever it was that they've done, right? Versus these new next generation antiviruses and whatnot that are connected into a secure cloud. And you've actually got that data in a repository where the attacker's going to have to get into there before they're going to be able to erase any of those artifacts or those logs. So I think that's a very, very good point to be made.
No, I completely agree, Cliff. And Cliff, I mean, we're nearly at the end of the episode. I mean, I feel like we just started, but we're close to the end of the episode. But Cliff, I want to leave, get your thoughts, really any final advice that you have for IT teams, security teams, CISOs that are listening, who are concerned about their endpoint security posture. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, and it's funny, Sean, I get asked this a lot, and I really give kind of the same answers all the time. A lot of it has to do with things that you can kind of do freely, right? Patch your systems, it costs you $0 to do that. Have a response plan. You've probably had something bad happen in the past. Use that to create the beginnings of a response plan, right? Have some kind of a managed service so that it's not all on your shoulders. And whether it's the CIS benchmarks or if you're using DISA-STIGs or whatever the case may be, secure your systems, right? Go in there and lock down all those items that aren't being used that are 100% another bit of attack surface, right? Close the ports that aren't needed. Turn off services that aren't needed. Quite frankly, just those items will come a long ways in terms of security.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, team, thank you so much again for all you do. Again, it's great working with you here at CIS and just continue what you're doing. And thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Same to you, Sean. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thank you to our audience. Any questions, comments, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Remember to sign up and subscribe in all the usual ways for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.